Very good, yes. Thank you, Duncan, and thank you for all doing a shift from the previous room here. I had to rewrite this. 3 years ago, shortly after the first announcement of a double black hole event with LIGO, there was a workshop here at KITP. I was not there, but several people in this room were, and Stirl led the setup of a declaration regarding the various models of binary black holes. It is now 3 years later. There have been many binary black holes seen, and I thought it would be useful to have a bit of an update. A couple of items here. One is just the usual, not yet.
Are you going to read the declaration?
No, it's a long declaration. We're just going to see what we have, and I have the declaration in front of me in case people want to change their minds from 3 years ago.
You quoted it.
No, I mean, it's there and the people's names are attached to
yes.
things. So if people want to change their mind, there's a record. It might be useful to display it if people start changing their mind. I will withdraw my model give.
Yes, exactly. So first, a gentle reminder to modelers, which I have given at other conferences, which is that if your model can accommodate any possible observation, it means that your model is not predicting anything. Therefore, there is a strength in laying things out and saying, gosh, you know, I really can't manage to explain that. On the other hand, we know that nature provides a lot of new interesting data, and if it happens that nature provides something really cool, then you suddenly realize your model really can do that. It doesn't mean you're a horrible person. It just means your model doesn't have as much predictive power as you might have hoped. So the thought here is that I am just going to be a moderator and scribe. I'm not going to be lecturing about this. I want everybody to fight, to collaborate in the discussion where we're going to try to determine what these different things can't do. So let me first set up what the table is, which we're hoping to fill out, and then I will ask for other suggestions for the table, and then we'll go to it. And because I'm feeling negative, this is going to be a negative table. The items we put into each of these potential grid elements are going to be things that a particular model can't do related to the observables. So what we have here, and again, if there are additional things, please let me know. I'm imagining that one of the items would be the rate. So rate per comoving volume, per mass, maybe total mass per redshift, and the masses themselves, the mass ratios. Chi-effective, if that's all you think it can be measured, or independently spin parameters, spin orientations relative to each other or to the orbit, the eccentricity of the binary, the location, are they in galaxies? If so, what types of galaxies? And possible EM counterparts. And then the types of models that I have up, and we already have somebody who wants to add to this, is we can imagine field binaries. These are binaries which exist in a region of relatively low stellar density. So, for example, in the field of our galaxy, isolated would mean just those two stars and nothing else, or a binary where any third or fourth or fifth stars are so far away they have no influence, versus the possibility that you could have something in the field where you have a triple or multiple with possible dynamic influence. And then here's another subcategory. What are you doing with your binary? Common envelope, chemically homogeneous evolution, Kozai Lidov. What about stellar clusters? Open clusters, globular clusters, nuclear clusters. What are the interactions that are producing these binaries? Are they binary single interactions, maybe a sequence of them, binary? Direct capture, two black holes coming in, emitting enough gravitational radiation that they become bound. Things happening in AGN disks and primordial. And here I would like to focus on black hole. Much as I love neutron stars, we need to focus at least somewhat. Okay, you have a suggestion for what you wish to add.
Yes, so it's kind of in between field and cluster. But if you have a very wide binary in the field, it does have interaction with other stars. This can lead to formation of closed binaries.
Okay.
So it's a comet-like formation of gravitational wave sources.
All right. So, so we could have
isolated perturbed.
Okay, perturbed. All right.
It's just a really big cluster.
Yeah. Oh God.
It's a very open cluster.
Okay.
I guess one other thing to just say is that from what we know of massless stars, they're almost never isolated or just triple and multiple, they're almost always formed in open clusters. So to some extent, it maybe doesn't make a lot of sense to separate them
No, I tend to agree. In fact, I think that this, that if you can have your massive stars form in binaries, and since they're forming open clusters, if there are dynamical interactions, this might make it enough more common that you have the formation of black hole binaries that it could kind of be a best of both worlds.
So, Cole, are you going to stop at the process of the dragon, or are you going to go further back up into, say, angular momentum transport in stars, the Jim Fuller versus...
I am agnostic about that. If we wish to say something about that, we can.
Because that might be worth just adding to the list, which is,
okay,
you know, do you know the Geneva models that have low angular momentum transport predict high spinning binaries? The
so like angular momentum models?
Yeah, angular momentum models.
It's not really a formation mechanism.
Yeah, it's
more
prior
a copy.
Well,
it's a copy of the predictions.
Yeah.
Well,
that's
not
relevant for everything. I mean,
but you can't come in because it'll predict a different spin than the other.
Yeah.
It's a process.
So one possibility is that when we get to the question of what can't be done, we can make our caveats there.
Right.
Cool. All right.
Yeah, so I'd put that under possible copy offs or something.
Yeah.
If it is determined that Fuller is wrong, then spins will be high. I think.
Any other additions to the table before we start doing stuff?
Sort of subdividing things already.
Yes.
I mean, I just point out the chemical homogeneous model has the second variation, which I mentioned last year, where you only have one involving chemically homogeneous.
Mm-hmm.
That's the how you can form a black hole neutron star system by that, but
yep,
we're still exploring whether that can also produce a black hole system. So
okay.
Push the trajectory, but it's something worth exploring.
I guess the other thing is when we get to the mass and rates, I don't know whether it's worth separating the columns of pair and, you know, above and below pair and stability below 140. I mean, they're kind
yeah,
of
I think that's
rather
also
different
useful
models
yeah
that yeah might get kind of crowded in your table in the way it is, but.
Possibly, yeah. The hope is we're going to have room for comments, and this not being as good as perhaps an online kind of spreadsheet, I'm doing the best I can. But yes,
it sort of fits into mass distribution, right?
Yeah. I mean, I just think if you divide the mass to less than 50 and 50 to 140, because I think many mechanisms are rather different for the two, so trying to merge them will possibly lead to confusion.
Right. Now remember, we're going to be putting stuff in this table that can't be done by some method. So.
And here you are addressing only black holes.
Black hole. Not neutron star, not black hole, neutron star, just black hole, which is the majority of the events seen so far. Okay, any other additions to the table? So in terms of bids for what can't be done for any of these combinations.
Sorry.
Yeah.
So I guess there are subclasses of things, so we can decide, but with the, you know, AGN disks, there are different ideas about whether the stars are formed in situ or whether they're sort of dragged into the disk. And, so mm-hmm. I don't know. We can get to that later. But maybe
okay.
Subclasses. Anyway.
So what I have in mind here is that if you are an advocate of a particular model and you wish to indicate what it is your model can't do, that's wonderful. If you are not an advocate of a particular model and want to indicate what that model can't do, that's wonderful too. And to put on pressure, I shall tell you that Chris Belchinski emailed me this morning with two things his model can't do, which I will reveal at the appropriate time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not advocating any single model, as I said before.
Yes.
But if I'm here to defend the chemical homogeneous model.
No. You're not defending it. You're saying what it can't do.
Yeah, I'm saying what it cannot do for. I mean, I think it's a mixture of systems, so that's why I think.
Yes.
I'm talking about population. I don't think it can give you an isotropic spin distribution, which extends all the way to high values. I mean, if it's around zero, then I don't care. But.
Okay. So you say that it cannot give the combination of high spin magnitudes and isotropic spin
yes
orientation.
Yes. I think that I would
okay
certainly think it can't.
I would say that the field also cannot do that.
Yeah, I would agree with that too.
don't think it's helpful.
I'll jump in on the other side and say I don't think any stellar cluster model can produce highly aligned or highly anti-aligned systems.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'll go further and say I don't think anything except for Kozai Lidov can produce highly anti-aligned systems.
Now, by anti-aligned, do you actually mean anti-aligned, or do you mean something which is more in the planes?
X pointing down and
I mean,
L pointing up.
Minus one.
Okay. So argument here is that we can't have highly aligned or anti. Okay? Sorry, there was something else before that?
So I'll say one just what I was reading from the list from last time. I will read something. We'll see whether people still agree. It says, if in an approximately equal mass binary black hole, one spin is large, so A over M greater than a half or something, and aligned with the orbit, and the other small, then a wide orbit shrunk by common envelope evolution will be accepted as the origin. Just saying that a lot of people in this room signed up to that 3 years ago.
Okay. So comparable mass, one high spin, one low spin, and did you say aligned?
The high spin aligned, the low spin, obviously, don't know.
So that would essentially say that no other path could do this. That would be something uniformly impossible for every other path. How do people feel about that?
I think it has to do with how many objects you detect. If you have 100 million events and you find one of those, it doesn't necessarily say something. And you also have to be sure that that is confidently determined. I think in a very small number of events, if that was seen, I think that seems reasonable.
And this is for a single right? Not for population.
Yeah, but if you have a lot of...
Yeah, violence, but I mean, I think I agree. If it turns out that a reasonable fraction of them are like that, I mean, obviously one in a million is...
But for a single event, I would still agree with that.
For the isolated perturb, they will not produce highly aligned. You would have correlation, but it wouldn't be highly aligned.
Okay.
And I think the isolated can't do isotropic. I think that was something we mentioned, but didn't get written down. The AGM disk probably can't have, it would be very difficult for it to have mass gaps. It does hierarchical mergers.
We have the lower mass gap and the higher mass gap. So do you mean it would be very difficult to have
the
parent stability?
So it would tend not to have parent stability, strong parent stability mass gaps.
It depends, like, you know, on what the binaries are doing. I mean, if each one merges once and then gets sucked into the central black hole.
Okay.
I could come up with a scenario where, I didn't have a bunch of hierarchical, like, the probability of given binary merge was much less than one. So the chance of getting two was.
So, in other words, if even in AGN disks, what you have is mergers between black holes that hadn't merged before and hadn't grown much since their production, then you have the same parent stability mass gap, right?
Right, yeah.
Well, so they have to just accrete as stars, not as black holes, right? If they accrete as black holes, then it's over, right?
Well, why don't we split the AGN disk part into two parts, one which has higher mergers and one which doesn't? Because otherwise it's such a broad category.
But the hierarchical mergers apply also in the stellar clusters, right? That there's inevitably a tail of second generation mergers, which are not in the gap. So I guess, is there any way of distinguishing those?
Yes, depending on the AGN disk, you tend to get high mass ratio, you tend to get hot intermediate mass black holes because you just keep piling them on. So if you have a very strong hierarchy, it just sucks them all. Which you could also do that in a globular cluster, but you'd have to avoid...
Yes, I'm all MBH is in
global. Yeah, I know, that's the classic thing, right? So, I think we can say against a globular case, I mean, you really can't get past second generation in a globular, because the second you have any significant spin on a black hole, the ejection or the recoil kicks enough to throw you out of the cluster.
It depends a little bit on the mass function of black holes initially. So if there is a way, for example, of producing a 200 solar mass black hole initially in a globular cluster, and then it can merge with a 10 solar mass black hole, it can stay in.
Okay.
So one thing I think, maybe I'm wrong, but that no model could explain except maybe primordial, would be if you had, maybe I'm wrong, but if you had, so if you could have low-spinning black holes, so you could rule out, you know, spin of any magnitude in the mass gap, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're, yeah, I mean, if you have a merger to get you there, you're spinning, right?
Not
or if you're creating gas to get there.
So,
you're in the parent stability gap.
You're in the parent stability gap, but you have a large population in the parent stability gap, and you can say they're all zero spin.
Yes. Then they're primordial.
I think the axions are spinning them down.
just out of curiosity here, let's suppose we imagine that we have two black holes that merge to fill the parent stability gap, and they were both rotating rapidly in such a direction that the total angular momentum is nearly zero.
They have to be formed from cosi.
Why?
They have to be
because it has to be.
Yeah.
But also, even if it's like that, anti line doesn't give you spin of zero.
It's very hard. It's spin of zero. It's.
Yeah, it's rare. So the question is how close to zero? So I'm just throwing in random stuff here. So if we have something of very low spin, I agree that that's the first guess we would have. Is that absolutely something that cannot happen from a merger? No. You can do it. It may be rare.
But I guess that's what I'm saying. If there are large populations.
I mean, you always need a population to make a statement.
Okay.
Am I wrong about this? You can't have the two spins completely cancel out the angular momentum. Like, you can't.
If they're anti-aligned, it's rather wide orbit, so I guess chance that you get that you can actually cancel the orbital angular momentum and have it end up low spin seems to me.
No, but you can do it. There were one of the fun things that people did with numerical relativity.
Yeah, there are simulations.
There are simulations of spinning black holes that give a merger remnant that is 0.01 spin or something.
Are they equal mass or high mass ratio?
No, they're equal mass. They cannot do high mass ratio.
Well, they can do 10 to 1.
Yeah, but this is like 10-year-old, yeah.
Yes.
They can equal mass with anti-line spin with some specific magnitude, and you get zero.
There's also a somewhat bizarre quirk there, too, which is that those configurations also tend to produce lower kicks, so they're more likely to be retained in the cluster.
But that would only work for one generation.
Yeah.
One population of very specific mass.
Yeah.
Obviously, to be relatively rare, so once you go to population, you can rule this out. Or...
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. You need a population, right, in these things.
Yeah. So I would also like to make a suggestion here, just so we can continue rolling. Suppose we find half solar mass black holes. Is there anything other than the primordial channel that can do that? In fact, is there anything other than primordial that can get you less than one solar mass for the black holes?
Well, Chuck Evans would like to see some solar mass neutron stars, but they will coalesce at low frequencies. So you have to have, it would have to be less than a solar mass and sweep all the way through the band and not touch before there. You could distinguish half solar mass neutron stars from half solar mass black holes because they coalesce at frequency.
Can you get half solar mass neutron stars?
Chuck would like to make them up.
It has been suggested from Shannig, for example, but for neutron stars, not for black holes.
Yeah.
But black hole, half solar mass black holes have been suggested as primordial. Types of density fluctuations.
Yeah, the freedom in what you can claim for primordial black holes is substantial.
You just can't violate microlensing or
Will people agree that if there is a less than half solar mass black hole ever found, it has to be primordial as opposed to any of these other channels? That'd be an absolute. That wouldn't be a super rare situation where it might happen given combination of circumstances. Is that something we can agree on or not?
But if one is found, I predict that there will be alternatives.
Chris, I'm just saying.
How fast
can
you
take a
slam?
These models, I think.
Whatever the speed of Ryan can be.
Yeah,
we're already coming up with that.
Yeah, but will we ever be confident it's not a half solar mass neutron star? I mean. You can distinguish the half solar mass neutron stars from the half solar mass black holes because the half solar mass neutrons coalesce at like 50 to 100 hertz. Whereas the black hole will sweep all the way up to 100 hertz.
Does it have a new mass, new equational state object?
Yeah, it could be a
smart
star if you want to
go. Hold that thought.
Yeah, exactly. Quark stars, but they'll have a
proportional gradient.
But at least it wouldn't be any of these. So Richard was asking whether it'd be possible to have something where you have a bifurcated core of a massive star. And I think the question there would be whether it would become a black hole.
I think he had it would form two clusters of black holes that were hierarchically fragmented. It was a really weird paper, which I didn't believe. But the problem there was it wouldn't happen just by itself. So you had clearly isolated, unique, well separated from other mergers occurring at the same time, mergers of some sort. Because you'd have a cluster of these things that would all merge at the same time in the same place.
All right. Well, is everyone willing to sign up to some version of at some threshold, below some threshold mass, if it's a black hole, it has to be primordial, or at least it can't be any of the rest of these, which is the point of the table. Because we're really ruling this stuff out. I mean, primordial may not be able to do it either. Primordial may not produce any black holes. But if we can at least say that none of these others could do it, then we have items to fill out on our table.
Subsolar mass black hole, which means zero tidal deformability, so it's not a neutron star, not a boson star,
yeah.
Or less is a Schwarzschild.
Exactly. I have in mind the idea that we know all of these are black holes, somehow. Yes?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. So this, I'll just do the by the general category. So this is one less than one solar mass, less than one solar mass, and less than one solar mass.
There's the other kind of logic, which is the gospel that anything in the field that's not perturbed by COSI has zero eccentricity by the time it gets to the Lyko band.
Yes, and by the way, I didn't point it out particularly, but I have single events and population subpopulation. And I think one thing that we're clearly running into appropriately is that in many cases you could imagine a truly remarkable, unusual circumstance which might get, say, a palpable eccentricity from an isolated binary. If the kick just happens to be at precisely the right magnitude at the right time, you could always arrange that. But we're kind of thinking here that this is going to be very rare. So the majority of the events can't possibly have that. Do people sign up for that as well? So that all mechanisms of let's see. So which of the things that can give us palpable eccentricity? COSI lead off can do it in principle, although even that is not terribly common. At least in the LIGO bands. In terms of some of the interactions here, like binary single or binary binary, some of these can lead to COSI. But if you just talk about, say, straight interactions, then there are also things that can get you potentially measurable eccentricity. So with eccentricity, clearly an important thing to look for. Which are the ones where we'd be willing to say, you know, eccentricity greater than blah at frequency blah would not be expected?
Just say from 3 years ago, was signed up that if an eccentricity greater than 10 to the minus 2 in the LIGO band was observed, then the isolated and chemically homogeneous common envelope all agreed to give up.
But you can still have a third star.
No, but that's why I said isolated binary, right. You can look at the triples, right. COSI, lead on clusters.
You can have a chemical machine solution combined with the third star, right?
So. Yeah.
That's
and LIGO band was LIGO band was 10 hertz or
yeah so I mean 10 30 hertz
10 or above yeah
so that's limiting their eccentricity at the moment of formation of just black hole to what value?
Well, it depends on the initial period. I mean, I think that would be around 0.7 0.8 or something.
So we're talking LISA 2, not just LIGO, right?
No,
LIGO.
Well, yeah, so in this particular case, we're thinking about over 10 hertz.
Well, this I understand. My question, the discussion includes the signatures or just LIGO?
If you like. I mean, I had in mind the ground-based instruments when I wrote this up. But
LISA can really
discriminate. But useful. I mean, we still have to wait a bit.
Yeah. I mean, I think the idea is this table is unlikely to not be revisited in 3 years. Not
launched
in 3 years.
So yeah.
The idea is we have another program after 04 and then get able to stand next to the declarations they make today. And
yes, exactly. All right, so there's been a pitch made for the eccentricity. This is based on 3 years ago. And the pitch is that this is, so we're saying
isolated field binary, actually mean?
It means that you have a
not in a cluster.
Yeah, but what's...
Well, so
different?
I
mean, because common envelope, that's a field binary. Chemical homogeneity is a field binary.
These are not supposed to be distinct. These are supposed to be two different things. So this is the type of system they find themselves in, and this is the process that you end up with. That's what I had in mind. So by isolated, I had in mind it's a binary, and any third or fourth or whatever stars are far enough away they have no influence on the system. This is where the triple or multiple does. This is the perturbed system. And then these are different mechanisms. So these are not distinct from that. I wasn't clear, sorry.
So the pit. Chris Bilginski formed some double black holes without use of a common envelope.
Yeah, he does. That's right.
Yeah. Given his population, he always combined every year event.
Yes.
It's not the population of them, but he can find
them. Yeah, that's the.
So the bit on the table from 3 years ago, as Cyril reminded us, is that as described up here, the isolated with common envelope or chemically homogeneous can't get E greater than 10 to the minus 2 at higher than 10 hertz.
So that corresponds, I could have just checked, to 0.995, the typical formation.
Oh, I would underwrite it.
Everyone happy with that? That's why we're not doing this. We're just doing this, this, and this.
Okay,
so eccentricity is E greater than 10 to the minus 2 at greater than 10 hertz. This is the...
I mean, I think it's a statement about isolated, I think. I don't know. I mean, it's not really a statement about distinguishing common envelope versus chemically homogeneous. But it does distinguish cosi lead off, so I don't know how you wanted to quite split those, right?
Okay, so let's see here. So we want to do this as isolated. So E greater than minus 2 at F greater than 10 hertz. And then...
Yeah, cosi lead off will allow that, I think.
I think you can take the opposite end, right? If you, if you suppose now we have, 10, 20, whatever events, right? If you go up and see 100 events, and none of them has an eccentricity greater than 0.1, let's say, which is measurable as far as I understand the LIGO, then you can probably rule out that a bunch of these dynamical channels are main contributors, right? Because they would, for example, if you have binary-binary or Kozai-Lido or stuff like that, they always get you some 5% of events that are eccentric in the LIGO one. So,
So everybody agrees with that now? So you'd say...
Or the one that I see.
That's what I've come to realize last few years. I just want to make sure that's kind of concrete.
Yeah, I mean, there's not really any way the lobbyists to get around having, unless you have an IMPH mucking everything up, to get around having about 10% of your things formed through gravitational wave capture, and about 5% of half of those will have eccentricities greater than 0.1.
And the capture, that's usually in binary single interactions, right? As opposed to isolated individual ships passing in the night, which are much...
You see some of those, but at a much lower rate.
Yeah, okay.
So maybe the statement is to put it in cold negative, you can't make...
You can't make all circular binaries from clusters, I guess.
So what we might say then, assuming I'm at the...
So I guess the way to maybe say that is the contribution to the rate can't be more than 20 times the high eccentricity.
Right, something like that.
Something like that. That's 5%.
Okay.
Right, but it's the sort of statement, I mean, if you believe that, say, the dynamical channel is 20% of the rate, then that would get divided by 5.
Okay.
Because that lead off produced 5 hertz.
And so I guess the same for the clusters, right? Something similar.
All right. This is, now, of course, that wouldn't be necessarily, I wrote open up here, as you point out, of course, this may be a little bit degenerate.
Yeah, that's more of the globular and nuclear, probably.
Yeah, okay. So we'll try to do that over here. So we'll say that.
It's probably probably not particularly interesting, but you would expect primordial to be circular because they've had the age of the universe to circularize.
Well, actually, no. In some of these scenarios, they predict that one of the ways to actually establish that they are primordial is the eccentricity.
Yeah, because you have to give in binary somehow, and most people were thinking of either to be direct capture or cosine.
So is that true that applies to globulars as a whole? So, I mean, when you consider the dynamics of a globular, you always have, independently of what you take, those binary symbols, binary, you always have 2% of these things that are eccentric. Because I remember, you know, when, you know, seeing paper about black hole binaries that are ejected by globulars, and those are pretty much all circular in the binary, in the LIGO band.
Yeah, so the ones that are ejected are actually pretty degenerate with, I mean, they're ejected with a thermal distribution, which isn't that much different from what your supernova takes binaries. The ones that merge in the cluster usually merge because they got pumped up to a high eccentricity.
Okay, so you always have both in the clusters.
Yeah.
In the models. Okay.
Okay. Anything else about eccentricities?
So what about the AGN disks sitting there? Sitting there hiding.
Well, one of the things, I mean, if you like, we can just go through each of these items and see whether we can make claims.
Okay, sure.
I think rates actually might be interesting to examine next.
Before you get to rates, there's one other thing. The first thing that was agreed the last time was that if LIGO finds more than 30 solar mass black hole primary with a mass ratio less than a third, then they're not the result of chemically homogeneous evolution of isolated binaries. Would you still agree with that?
Well, in the case where both of them are developing chemically homogeneous,
yeah,
I think nothing has changed.
So in the chemically homogeneous, if they're both chemically homogeneous, the mass ratio should be a word.
Both chemically homogeneous, the mass ratio should be extreme.
Okay.
In this case, yes.
Larger than.
I mean, I think some models say it's larger than 0.8 or something.
But our best models are 0.8. That's our best model.
So but at least what people were willing to sign up to was a little edgy.
Yeah, that's right. Well, nothing has changed there.
Okay, so that's the statement, right? So if they're both chemically homogeneous and the mass of the primary is greater than 30 solar masses, having a mass ratio less than a third is not expected in that channel.
Why is there a constraint on the primary mass for this? I would just have that statement without the constraint on the mass.
What do you think?
Oh, yeah, I'm playing without the mass. Yeah, I don't think you need that constraint.
It's just that it's the mass ratio that is problematic.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you're even at 10 solar mass. I mean, at 10 solar mass black holes. I thought there was some issue of the, you know, how there were 30 solar masses. The tides were pretty clear, but
at
10, it was maybe less clear.
You don't get anything below 25 at the moment.
Right. I think the 30 is relevant because that sort of picks out that channel basically.
Okay.
The channel has difficulty producing 10.
So speaking of all of the...
I mean, you could even put that in as a statement that if you find lots of 10 solar mass black holes, they're probably not chemically homogeneous.
So speaking of all of the, I mean, the channels where you're bringing in sort of, you know, originally singleton black holes, then you don't, as a population, right, you shouldn't expect, that's the way of saying it. I mean, you're drawing black holes from the same distribution, right? Whatever that distribution is. I guess you don't know if there's some preference that certain, so you could, the process could be dependent on the masses, okay. Yeah. I'm just thinking of you know, where you're drawing them from some distribution.
So
the population as a whole has to obey drawing them from the same distribution.
When you're talking about things like solar clusters, so if you have binary single interactions, then exchanges tend to favor the heavier ones.
Yeah.
So this drives you to the heaviest comparable masses for your binaries.
Right. The mass ratio distribution from Krystal-Jensky's models and star cluster models are infuriatingly similar.
Okay.
I think the only way that would work is if you have an open cluster with only a handful of black holes in it, because then you can't really exchange that much, right? Like you can't find another 20 solar mass sphere, 20 solar mass. So then you're limited to the small population of black holes. But in that case, you're not really hardening these things or forming free body binaries anyway.
Shall we try rates?
All right, I'll start.
Okay.
I don't think globular clusters or open clusters can explain 50 mergers per gigaparsec cube per year.
What about nuclear?
Nuclear is whatever you want it to be.
Are you sure about that? So let's suppose you have all star clusters dissipate over time, so all stars are one clusters.
So, I mean, I believe that, but...
We think that's true for massive.
I think it's true, but then we get into the more complicated issue of, you know, what even is the field? The field is a made-up thing that's all dissolved star clusters. And usually when I talk about rates, I try to subtract out things that are unperturbed binaries in cluster models, because I figure that's really, you know, more honestly, that's part of the field. And so if you do that, and you just ask, how many binary black hole mergers can you create in open and globular clusters through processing of dynamical processing of black holes, I think the answer is not 50 per gigaparsec cube per year.
Okay, what's your upper limit?
So I wrote a paper with Avila on this last year, and it was basically, optimistically, it was about 15 per gigaparsec cube per year in the local universe, and it went up to about 30 at CO1. I think that's a little over optimistic, so I would say maybe 10 to 20 in the local universe.
So would you say that for all types of star clusters, in terms of nuclear star clusters, you have a smaller binary fraction, which means that it can be tougher to actually capture these, right?
Yeah, so nuclear is weird. I don't necessarily trust the rates of three-body binary formation in nuclear clusters because the velocity dispersion is way too high, but as you well know. But the single-single capture rates, like the stuff that Benzikos and his student have been doing, I don't really have a good sense for how often that happens.
When you massive black hole is involved, the original rates that you got were relatively low. But you could get them higher with extra nanospherity of the cluster, etc. So that is a problem, not predicting enough. So I would guess it would be on the low side. You will never get to, certainly not 100, probably 50 is also a good path.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of those.
The highest rate that I've seen from a single nuclear cluster channel was 3 per gigaparsec cube per year. The highest that I ever seen in a paper, too.
Okay. Well, it can get higher with a massive black hole, but I would also say that it cannot get much higher, so probably 10, 20.
I would be amazed if you got that. Because, I mean, getting the binaries actually into
I certainly agree. This is kind of extreme
upper limit. Yeah, I would suspect that the same applies to AGN disks, I would suspect.
No. Well, the AGN disk problem is that the models are not evolved enough to
make any predictions.
They don't predict the binary rate at all, I would say, right now.
So it could be anything.
The isolated perturbed, I think we cannot get above 20, but it's really the highest.
Okay, so we'll say that it's greater than 20 per gigaparsec cube per year. Same here?
If we're including everything in there, let's say 30, or maybe 30. I don't know. I don't have a good sense of how to include nuclear. If it's opening globulars, I would say, you probably can't do more than 30 per gigaparsec cube per year.
So 30, not 20, then. Okay?
Find them. Yeah.
So this is greater than 30 per gigaparsec cubed per year.
So I would probably, I don't know, but the local AGN density is extremely low.
Uh-huh.
But the efficiency is very high.
Yeah, but if you assume that there are 100 per gigaparsec cubed per year due to AGN disks,
doing
math of how many binaries you have to merge in each single AGN disk.
That was a calculation we did with, assumed in situ star formation, and we just counted up all the AGN and assumed that, a large fraction of the black holes that aren't in the gaseous disk, given the amount of star formation that's inferred. And that ended up being about 5 per gigaparsec.
Right.
But that's a sort of an upper, I would say, upper limit. Mm-hmm. But there may be other channels, like dragging stars into the disk that Dublin and others have been looking at, and Ray have been looking at. So there could be ways to enhance it, but you can play this game. Yeah, I would be surprised if you got up to 100, but
Anyways, we have some paper, Barry McCurran has a paper where he went down the whole rate and it was like 4 orders of magnitude variation.
So does that mean ultimately we're not confident enough at this stage to place limit?
That would be my guess.
Okay.
I would never believe 100 gigaparsecs would be an AGN disk. It's just impossible.
Our back of the envelope was 5 was an upper limit, but they're...
Okay.
Yeah, right. Barry's paper's like 10 to the minus 5 all the way up to 10 to the 30.
They have a lot of transport into that.
Basically, it's not predictive.
Yeah. Okay. So this isn't predictive enough.
Can I say one thing about those models that if they were tweaked to produce 150 per gigaparsec per year or something or above, I think once you, in 04 or above, it seems to me you start predicting there should be repetitions.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Right, because they're not within 300 megaparsecs. They're not that many AGN. And so if you're relying on extreme AGN to produce most of the rate, I think you start predicting that those 6 galaxies will be producing a large fraction of the mergers.
Yeah, then you have to know, can you, with given angular resolution, can you tell they're coming to 6 galaxies?
Well, that's why I say if it's really 6 of them, which is about the right, again, it depends a little on. But if you're trying to make a high rate, you really have to have all of the star formation, and there are only a few AGN within even the gigaparsec that dominate the total accretion rates. And if it's 6 or 10, you'll start noticing that there are preferred 40 square degree patches on the sky. I think.
Yeah.
Thank you. So.
Okay, and I think as far as primordial,
isotropy would be ruled out for the locations of the AGN. Anyways.
Well, that's an interesting thought. Do we want to put that down?
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, all right.
Location, yeah, strong correlation with AGN would be obvious for the AGN test.
Okay.
Isotropy is... precision will be a little fuzzy. The rate dependent stuff.
Okay. As far as rates for primordial, I think that the latest analysis suggests that if all dark matter were in primordial black holes of the right mass, people think you would get orders of magnitude more mergers than you actually see, when everything is included. And therefore, since you can also have zero in the primordial black holes, that seems like a large enough range that we can't really say one way or the other, probably. Okay, that's cool. Masses. No, so not about masses. I do not have inside information. Many of you do. But of course, there's a persistent...
That, with rates, there is one thing that most of the models predict that the rates should increase with redshift.
Yes. And so in fact, this is one of the things that Chris...
If the rate is flat or decreases with redshift, that would be difficult to do with most of the stellar evolution models.
And this is one of the things that Chris Belchinsky said his model cannot do at the moment.
Yes.
Until it's observed.
Yeah.
So at what point were you able to weigh in on this language?
April.
Okay, so you held enough.
There's April. A publication. It's 038.
038 for April.
Yeah, April's early April.
So given another 100 events or less, then.
We have
18 in 46
and 72. Okay, I'm just trying to get a sense of how many events you'll need to actually weigh in on this. You're saying you already have enough, you just have to wait till April to publish it.
Well, doesn't the catalog already say that like the 88% chance the rate is increasing with redshift? Okay, that's already there.
Yeah, but don't you have
so if we look farther out, I think that if we connect the isolated evolution with star formation, then if we can see beyond the redshift of 2, we should see a turnover in the rate.
Yeah. You see the same thing with star clusters, though, because they're all coming to the same star formation. I think the only thing that would have a completely different shape would be primordial black holes.
Or AGN disks might again be complicated because the peak of the quasars is more redshift 3 rather than 1.5 to 2 like star formation. So it might be
okay.
The rates will go up with redshift, but I think you pick up different masses. At a higher redshift, I would naively think
you have lower Middle East, you have typically more massive things, and things that can be form more locally would be a bit less massive. So it's...
Yeah, this is, I mean, this is where it starts just jumping off that to get a little weird, because I think dynamics, for instance, can totally explain the rate of heavy black holes in Lagrangian. So we define that as everything greater than 20 solar mass components, then I think clusters can easily explain that.
So what's the dependence of the direct collapse and then Bethe-Lindner kick? Because as far as I remember, most of the cases we can actually get reasonable rates in almost all models require some major significant part of the phase space to have small kicks. I'm quite sure about is the isolated evolution. If you have even sort of momentum kicks, might be difficult. Just simple momentum kick might be difficult for many of them, unless they are very, very massive. 10 solar mass black holes, even with a momentum kick taking a neutron star as a thing, you start losing the rates very fast.
Okay.
So, there are things that depend on this assumption. And for example, in our case, if you have a direct collapse only from some mass and above, then you have a very clear cutoff in rate, or this is a very different change of rate. In our case, in my case of isolated perturb, for example, the mass where you stop having direct collapse, something like that. Basically, you don't have low kicks, then you have nothing, because we must have low kicks, otherwise, or no kicks at all in order to actually for this tool. Otherwise, this white binary just disrupted.
Okay.
So that depends on the. But that's also true, as I said, for the isolated, I think, evolution, for everything.
They don't disrupted, they can just be widening. That's already bad enough. But
they don't have as bad,
But for the chemically homogeneous models where you're starting with two stars that are already orbiting each other at 400 kilometers a second to 50 kilometers a second kick is not a big issue.
But if you give it a 300 kilometers.
Yeah, 300 is fine, but I think 300 is hard even with a 10 solar mass black hole, because if you give it the same momentum as a neutron star, it's more like a 50.
Again, doesn't kill it completely, just significant change rates. Like I say,
I think it doesn't have. For close binaries, I think for the common envelope, it's more of an issue because you're starting with a wide binary. Yeah. But for the chemically homogeneous, you're starting with things.
In chemically homogeneous, I would agree.
But it still reduces some.
It reduces some.
Since I didn't comment on the rates, I was just checking out paper. I think our nominal rate would be something like 10. I don't know how high I'm prepared to go, but. I think 30 or 50 would certainly be difficult.
Would you be willing to say you can't go above 50?
Difficult. I don't know how at the moment.
Okay, so we'll leave that open because we're not sure. In terms of going back to the issue of the redshift dependence, which Tomek had raised in
the redshift dependence is probably the same as largely follow star formation, with deep time delays, of course. But.
Yeah, so in this range, I guess the expectation of pretty much any model, I don't know about primordial probably as well, is that you have an increase in the co-moving rate density with increasing redshift.
But I don't think primordial, because primordial they form in another, they form in the very early.
Well, there's two scenarios for primordial formation. There's, just check the literature. The original one that was proposed was they form in binaries around the time that they collapse from overdensities, and those would have low eccentricity. There's the other model, which is you have an encounter of two primordial today that were formed in the early universe by direct capture. So you can put some primordial black holes in your clusters and see what happens, and those would have higher eccentricities.
But we are discussing the rate here.
But I was just checking the rates as well, and the fraction of primordial that are greater than one solar mass is ruled out at pretty high confidence by dwarf galaxy dynamics. So there's a recent paper on that that I saw the other day, but I haven't had a chance to pass carefully enough to make a clear statement. But I think that that's pushing primordial to the low end of the solar mass spectrum and not having 30 solar mass primordial black holes.
But a question there, is the statement that you just made, the assessment of whether the majority of dark matter could be made of primordial black holes, or is it the statement that at the LIGO rates can't be primarily primordial black holes?
I think it's that the dark matter, it's a statement about dark matter, but the LIGO rates are okay, because that would be much, it's a tiny fraction of the dark matter density.
Yeah.
I think we could make an interesting race claim on the primordial black holes. I'm not sure if I could say if it's increasing or decreasing, but if the LIGO rate or a significant fraction of the LIGO rate doesn't follow cosmic star formation, like plus or minus some delay, like then it's probably not coming from stars.
Okay. So with that, I guess this statement is very general for things that involve stars in one way or the other. Do people agree that this is the expectation for every model, therefore, I mean, whether it's 2 or 1.5 or 3 or whatever, but in this sort of range, everything except primordial would be in trouble if this were not followed?
Can I ask a question? I think 0 to 2 it's okay. I think with AGN disk, the question is, does it actually peak at 2 or could it be earlier? But just to play devil's advocate, for example, and I think in the original chemically homogeneous ones, you only managed to get them to work if the delay was like 10 gigayears.
Nothing else.
No, in the original Marshall paper, right? The fraction. So I'm just saying, so if you had a model where everything was delayed by 10 gigayears, you could have a peak at redshift 0 and then it would rapidly decline thereafter.
Yeah, all
right. And my impression was that the original Marshall, it was really hard to get short delays. If you look at that paper, whether it's peaky enough to actually get a decline is another matter. But I'm just saying, if one had an extreme model like that, I think you could arrange that.
That is certainly true.
But it seems a little contrived, but I just thought that because that original chemically homogeneous one that really preferred the long delays because it was really hard to get them.
Yeah, but that's because they usually that. There are ways to get that kind of thing to happen, but usually that means that most of, like, you can imagine tweaking an isolated model to do something like that if you work really hard and prevented most mergers, but usually that kills the rate.
Yeah, I agree. It's hard to get a high rate and avoid that because it requires some tuning, basically, if you have to tune things at the edge. But I was just bringing that up as a if it were determined that, it would not surprise me if such models then came out.
Yes, but this
is one of the makers, around his kicks. The models already exist.
Yeah, so there already is an existence proof of a model like that.
So just
not
to...
one I'm advocating.
So to pursue that, is this the statement then that it's not that the delay time is uniform up to some 10 or 20.
There is actually a peak at 10 gigayears.
Okay.
If it's uniform, I think it smears out and it's just a convolution. But if you actually have a peak with a delay which is longer than the lifetime at redshift 1 or 2, then you basically move the star formation peak down to a lower redshift.
Okay.
It's really hard to do and get the right one. My sense of things is I think that's a great statement for those models, except for primordial.
Why except for primordial?
If we have no idea. We have no constraints on primordial. Who is Carl? Were you the person who brought this up? I mean, I don't know. I could imagine that they all form in highly eccentric binaries that take a really long time to merge, or that there is some structure in the primordial dark matter halos that they form that begins precisely in this scenario. The true merger rate is gigantic, except it's being suppressed by red long galena. So it's just ignorance. I don't know what I don't know, and so I'm not willing to make that statement.
So one possibility here is I include all models except for the primordial with a little indicator that there might be some sliver of hope for chemically homogeneous models if it turns out that we don't have this. If it turns out that there's an increasing co-moving rate density with increasing redshift. Would people be happy with that, or are there other ways of having essentially a not just a long delay, but a preferred long delay?
COSI does that. You have a weak just quadrupolar COSI oscillations, and you're something with close to merge anywhere, you can get delay times of like 10, 11, 8 years.
So you can, but I think
But I guess the question is that the majority of the channel?
Yeah.
I mean, to get this to work, you have to say that all of the black holes end up with that long delay, not 10% of them.
Yeah.
I think if you do a wide population, you get roughly, give or take, equal contributions from like the really fast mergers that merge due to high optical turns. And then just, I'm talking about field populations here, not like things in nuclear star clusters. And then you get a long, roughly equal sized population that is just being driven by slow quadrupolar oscillations.
But again, I think if we imagine that independent of the actual mechanism, there's something that gives a uniform delay population out to 100 gigayears or something, then that's not going to do this.
Yeah, I think the problem is, I mean, I think you're right about the amplitude, but remember that the inner binary has a range of separation, so the cosi is a factor times the inner binary period, and so if you change the inner binary period over a range of 10, then I think you kind of smear out all of that, unless you're just at the edge and the rates are low. I think it's hard.
Yeah, I agree. You can get a wide range, but you can't get flat.
So, okay with my suggestion here in terms of adding everything with an asterisk or chemically homogeneous and leaving primordial, we have no idea. Okay.
So we do have, I agree with that, but we do have differences. I mean, some of the, I think the isolated do have peak at short delay times, right, compared to other things. So if we had enough statistics to actually do short enough delay time distribution to a better level, you can. This could actually constrain
the model. Well, I think one of the things this discussion helps clarify is that if the production of the binary is related to star formation or AGN activity, and the peak in the delay time, whatever it is much less than 10 billion years, then you would generically expect an increase with increasing redshift. And exactly what that is, maybe with enough thousands of events, we'll be able to distinguish things, and models will adjust to the data, I'm sure.
Why binary isolated perturb? You have more or less uniform behavior distributions. It's not about information, it's about the long-term perturbation.
Sure, but it wouldn't do this. So it might be equal to zero, but it wouldn't be less than zero. Any other comments about rates before we talk maybe about masses? Okay, so in terms of masses, one of the things that has come up as a definite prediction from lots of the different models is that the parent stability mass gap, which I guess was 80 to 130 in your declaration and has had fluid boundaries, but somewhere in this vicinity, right? That is 81.
Yeah, I think what Stan Woosley finally signed off on was 80, but I mean, the actual number was more like 65.
Okay, and here we have the interesting situation where, although I don't have inside information, I'm sure you all know there's a rumor of a roughly 100 solar mass black hole found in one of the LIGO events. Which is not, the point is not to comment on that. The point is that if your model can't do that, then this is a real opportunity for you to lay it out. So the statement, of course, is that the parent stability supernova mechanism prevents you from having stars evolve to black holes of that mass. And there are other possibilities we come at. But first of all, any loopholes anyone wants to put in? With many of these things, for example, so not repeated mergers, not any of that. Yeah, just an individual star evolving to a black hole of that mass. Anyone want to make a bid for how that can actually happen?
Can it be lensed?
Can it be lensed?
That's a question about the interpretation. Let's assume that.
That is not. Yeah, but then you can't rule. I don't know.
But we're going to assume that we have perfect knowledge of the events from our observations.
Okay.
That's a separate question.
But I agree that if for an individual event, you'd have to consider this possibility. But sure, for the purposes of discussion, let's suppose we've genuinely established the true source frame mass.
So I talked to Stan a little bit about this. I mean, you can still do, if you could get away with having a hydrogen envelope still on the star, mm-hmm. you can get a more massive black hole and avoid the parent stability gap. So his limit right now on the parent stability gap is because he's looking at helium core masses.
Okay.
Right? So if you could
But the helium 4 masses, I think, are like 40. Why the 80 that he was talking about 3 years ago, I think, allowed some hydrogen. Can you get? You can get.
So you'd have to retain a lot of the hydrogen. So 40, you could get 100 solar mass, you know, with hydrogen envelope there. There are stars like that. The problem is, you know, in the giant phase, I don't know how you avoid losing that mass. The one way you could do it is at very low metallicity, like zero, you could maybe avoid a giant phase, but it would be really rare, right? So I don't know how to make, you know, if it's 1 in 20 of the black hole systems, you're screwed. If it's 1 out of, you only see 1 ever, then you could do something like that. But that's, you know, I think that's hard. I tried to beat him down, and maybe Ken can comment on what's the maximum, you know, when do I get above the maximum helium core mass? And his number is like 133. So you should start getting black holes again. That's where the gap ends.
Yeah.
Can you get smaller? And at least the impression I got from Stan is the 133 is the mass at collapse. I was thinking it just had to be a mass at some time, but he implied that if you went down to 120, you would, you know, you started with a 140 solar mass helium core, but you went down to 120 at collapse, he said it would still go parent stable, in which case he can't do it from the upper round bound. But
okay.
Maybe Ken correct that. Or
I mean,
someone else.
You can certainly form stars in the parent stability gap, but not necessarily isolated stars. Right? I mean, this is something Stephen Justin published in 2014. If you have mergers, you can of course produce stars that have a high enough mass, high enough helium core mass, and that actually do not become red giants. Right? They stay blue till the end of helium core burning, and it could well explode in that phase.
Yeah, this was Michaela's point from open clusters a couple
right.
weeks ago.
Right, that's probably the same point, yeah.
So if they...
We actually already have done these models sometimes.
So if they collapse at blue super giants, then you don't lose any mass from the impulsive loss of resonance, and all of that ends up in the black hole.
That's the way they fall, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So. I think it's right. In the chemically homogeneous picture, you never get a big hydrogen envelope.
No.
So I think under chemically homogeneous, finding something in the parent would be difficult.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
If you go to the, we have a sensation that is crazy. Even helium core, part of the helium core is ejected. So I don't think it's possible to keep hydrogen at all because of the pulsation. So I think 50 solar mass is sort of very good
game. Even if it's a blue supergiant?
Yeah, it's the same thing. The core is pulsating, ejected.
So that's if you're coming up from the bottom end, and then the question is, can you come down from the top end?
So supergiant with the gap exists 50 to 150.
So you said 150. Stan told me 133.
Yeah, it's just mass of the helium core at these 300 solar mass stars. So depends on the overshooting and so on.
Our paper, based on Pablo Marchand's calculations, is 123.
So yeah, I mean, this is my question: is can I beat down from the top end? You know, you just said 123 now, so it's like anybody go for 110? 10? And can I do something where I lose some mass just before collapse so that I don't, or maybe I lose mass during the collapse if it's rotating rapidly enough?
So it's the idea that you're coming from the top, you don't have the multiple pulsations,
yeah.
So you're not necessarily going to remove the hydrogen.
Yeah.
If you're a blue supergiant.
Well, no. If I'm coming from the top, I can lose the hydrogen. I'm at a 300 solar mass star, right?
Well,
and then I'm just trying to lose enough mass to make it be 100, right? So I lose the hydrogen envelope, I'm down to 130 solar mass or 150 solar mass helium core. Now, if I can lose 50 or 30 to 50 or 20 to 50 solar masses more, either just before collapse or during the collapse, then I have 100 solar mass stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be you're looking at the end of the parent stability.
Also, if you need rotation to support these things to hold them up, how can you produce low spin black holes Can you produce low spin black holes if you're using rotation to hold these things up against
the Let's not assume that they're similar.
I don't think rotation.
Well, no, so 3 years ago, Stan, the reason he pushed it up to 80 instead of like 50 was because, well, maybe if you have a very high rotation, you can get some sort of centrifugal support or something like that.
Yeah, that was Stan's original poll that's written in here, is that rapid rotation might change it.
Yeah, if it's non-rotating, then he was saying you were limited to like 50 or 55 or something like that.
Well, that would be an interesting qualification to make.
Yeah.
So, because then that would be a statement about the range of masses as a function of spin.
Mm-hmm. I think coming at it from the top, if you were to, what Chris said, which is if you were to say the explosion itself ejected a bunch of mass, it seems like it would be hard to do that without rotation too, right?
Yeah, I mean, so I would, if it was didn't have rotation, I would say, you collapse 130 solar mass helium core, you pretty much go down with a whimper kind of thing. But if you have some rotation, I can get some mass out.
So there's some excluded region of mass and slow spin.
Yeah, but I will say I'm very much getting the sense that when push absolutely comes to shove, that there are going to be creative ideas about how to populate this region.
Yeah, but I think that, you know, while there are creative ideas, we should agree that the rate as a function of, say, mass should decrease in the gap.
Yeah, yeah. You can't go up.
There should be some gap or some
there should
depression.
Be some, you know, yeah. Break in the power law or that some mass distribution.
And there is some prediction then that there should be a little pileup just at the gap limit, right? So you see it in Stan's models, you see it in Chris Baczynski's models, where there's a little uptick before it does the drop.
So well, then I can make a claim for stellar clusters based on that. If the spins are low and you get multiple mergers in star clusters, then you should see a tiny, tiny little bump in the gap at twice whatever that pileup mass is.
Yeah.
So for instance,
yeah,
if you're...
So like 90 years, yeah.
Mergers.
So if, let's say that there is a pulsational pileup, that's what I'm going to say, at like 45, 50 solar masses.
Parapulsational pileup.
Then if you can merge these things multiple times in Galaga clusters, which does depend on the spins being very low initially, then you will get a population of 80 or 90 solar mass black holes, depending on where that lower thing is. And then that will be sort of the upper limit you can get from globular clusters, at least. Yeah, so you have 280, they merge in, or 240s, they merge and create an almost 80. That finds itself another partner and merges again.
Yeah, but this 80 should have a high speed?
It should, yeah.
Oh, sorry.
That's what we said originally. If you find something... If you get a huge population in the middle of the parents' building gap,
we're focusing on low spin.
I'm just saying. Yeah. So none of these models.
Yeah, I think actually, is that impossible for any model?
Unless you have axions.
Unless you have axions or primordial, I don't think you can get a large population in the gap zero. Yeah.
I don't know, does that clear an AGN disk, for example? They don't know anything about the parent stability gap in there, they can tell.
Yeah. And
they're black holes as opposed to stars.
And if they're growing by accretion in the AGN disk, then they...
Right, I mean, they might actually prefer the higher mass as the growth rate goes up.
And the higher spin as well.
Zero spin. So to get them to have a population of zero spin black holes in the gap is hard.
I don't know about AGN disks.
If you run them through like some kind of
random, I think Doug Green's model is randomly accreting from clouds. But it seems to me, at least in terms of the mass distribution, the AGN disk is the one where you might expect more. I mean, you could imagine a model that would easily have more at 90 solar masses than at 30.
In general, nuclear cluster, like mass segregation, we have strong preference for the most massive ones.
Clusters?
Nuclear clusters. Yeah. Nuclear clusters, first, you don't lose the black hole so much, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you have significant strong mass segregation that even if you have a relatively small fraction of very massive black hole, they will segregate all the way, and they have the highest chance of actually being merged
For example, Sukhothai, the polar
there. I think there you'll be most likely producing eccentric ones, though, because once you form two, because you're not going to be able to keep it or form it into a binary after it's gone through one merger, because the kick will dissociate just about any binary there. It won't dissociate from the nuclear star cluster. But then you basically have the same floating through the cusp. And one of the things that, like, Benzei, the student whose name I can't remember, which is embarrassing, have been showing is that because more massive things segregate closer to the McCall-Wolf cusp around the supermassive black hole, you need to get into a closer paracenter distance before they form a single catch of binary, so their eccentricities are higher. So I think you have, like, an 80 or 100 in the nuclear star cluster, which have hella high eccentricity.
That's for direct.
Yeah,
but if they are Sukhothai little, when they start, the roll, they start at lower density. So it's like lower cluster, then they can actually have repeating things. And all after repeating and getting higher masses, they would segregate faster and get to the center. So their combination is a lower cluster like in the outer skirt, and then start segregation and freezing. What I'm saying in general, that's not necessarily about really the gap. If you talk about mass, you have a significant difference in the mass function. You have much more preference to much larger masses. The gap, I agree, is still, but in general, the gap is difficult to get to in almost any case, right? But in general, the nuclear cluster size, the mass should be typically higher. It's not like the typical IMF or whatever.
Okay. So I'm pitching that in these mechanisms, except for AGN disk and our usual primordial where we have no idea, I think people had agreed that there would at least be a very low density, low fraction of masses there. Maybe not absolutely excluded, but a low fraction, a dip. And what you're saying is that for the nuclear star clusters, for the nuclear clusters, you would be surprised by, so you expect a cusp, say, leading up to a very steep increase leading up to whatever this gap is.
Whatever IMF you had would be,
So, flat, unexpected.
I would say typical IMF is not expected. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Other comments about mass? Mass ratio. The events that have been revealed to the world at large are all pretty consistent with comparable mass. But we're going to see a lot more of these. And of course, we also know that in many of these mechanisms, it is felt that there's going to be a tendency toward comparable masses for different reasons, but a tendency toward comparable masses. So this leads to the possibility of asking, what if we have a Q less than a third or a quarter or a tenth or whatever the value is. Are there any willingness to say that these mechanisms can't do that?
I would say it's difficult to do in a globular or open cluster. Not impossible.
Okay. Difficult. Want to quantify that? Q less than a half, less than 10% of all events from clusters?
Well, less than half is actually pretty easy if you have multiple generations of mergers.
Yep.
Less than maybe a quarter or a fifth is really hard.
Well, if you have multiple generations of merger, you have an oligarchic merger, and the heaviest thing gets more and more extreme compared to the rest, so it becomes easier and easier the more you can have that.
Oh, that's true. You can only really do that in nuclear clusters because the escape speed.
Or AGN.
Yeah, AGN you can do whatever you want. Yeah.
What about in these sorts of mechanisms? So not involving lots of dynamics with lots of other stars. Suppose that at some point there's a discovery of a Q of one quarter merger. Is that fine with any of these mechanisms?
For both of our chemical engines, I wouldn't expect that. But
okay.
One, I would not rule it out.
Now, if you're talking population-wide, then you would, if you have a lot, many of those, for example, then you would rule it out.
But we already know fraction.
Pardon me?
What's the most normal? What is the lowest mass ratio in which is detected now?
They're all consistent. Asteroids are so huge. Yeah, it's hard to say, but they're all consistent with the mass ratio distribution
but it was inferred from the observations reported so far, strongly favored comparable mass binaries.
Okay, I understand it's consistent with what? What's the lowest distance?
It's a banana, right? You take all the low mass ones and you get almost no constraint on the mass ratio.
No, but you cannot answer the equation at 90%.
Could it be consistent with all of them being 2-to-1?
It's consistent with the low, below it's just 0.2.
Yeah, but I think, are you asking, is it possible? I'm not sure which direction of the sign you're asking the question. Is it possible that any of them are consistent with unequal mass? Or
is it possible that any of the detected now have a lower than a third or 0.2 or whatever?
Yes.
I think 0.2, yeah. I think if I remember.
Yeah, 15, 12, please.
Well, one of them seems to be quite non-equal to 1, right?
Yeah, and certainly one of them, one is excluded at 90%, yeah. Which is the 0.7, 0.29.
We also discovered
0.29 is going to have complicated.
We discovered 10 of them,
one of them
is
going to be outside the 90%. We discovered 10, one of them is going to be outside the 90%.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yes, they can go up to 0.2.
So the mass ratio sounds like they're not strong commitments here.
You need to get something real.
No, you get better values.
Yeah.
And then determine what the models predict. No, I mean, so in terms of what the models actually predict, so you've made the statement that if you have two of them coming from the chemically homogeneous scenario, that having a Q less than a third, and I get the sense it's even probably a bit conservative, less than half might even be a challenge. So that would be an issue for that particular case.
But I thought, if I remember papers by Belchinsky in the CE models, he wouldn't predict mass ratio also below 1.3 or...
Yeah, that's another one of the things where there's a convergence of the predictions.
Yeah, but for at least for a lot of these field binaries, the way we don't know what the initial mass distribution of stars are.
Yeah.
So that's one way to get around that is you would... Mm-hmm. If you got something that was really weird, you'd start playing with that, parameter.
Sure, unusual metallicity, some environmental thing.
So you cannot say the model can't do.
It sounds like it.
Yeah, well, and I think the rate might be low if he was pushed in that direction. So that would be, it could be that if the distribution of binaries initially have wider mass distributions, he would not get that many black hole binaries. So it could be if you combine rate with mass ratio, you can rule it out.
Although you can also dial other things to get the rate change.
Yeah, so this is the problem. There's a lot of free parameters and what we don't understand. So a lot of what you're doing with these observations is constraining those parameters, not really ruling out a model.
Exactly, yeah. All right, so any other thoughts about...
I would guess that because of mass segregation and the cluster models, it would be rather surprising if the rate of 10 solar mass black holes was much higher than that for 30, for example.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, the rate from clusters, or at least from globules, is actually almost flat from, 10 to 30 solar mass, and you go almost nothing below 10 plus 10.
Well, I mean, we don't really know the mass distribution of black holes and globular clusters, right?
No. This is entirely dependent on what you assume about black hole case.
And the formation mass of black holes is a function of metallicity and things like that. So the statement you're making is based on current models, this is the expectation. But that could be changed, right? So if it turned out that there really is a tremendous deficit of 20 solar mass...
But I think, for example, it depends on a little what's found, but if you find some significant number of 100 solar mass mergers and you want to explain those by dynamical models, I think it becomes extremely surprising if you find tons of 10 solar mass underneath, right? Because you need the 4 days in order to make the 80s to 100. So.
Yeah, that's quite the gauntlet of kicks you have to run in order to build up from 10s. Agreed. Other thoughts about mass ratios?
I think you can get slightly more asymmetric mass ratios from triples, field triples in particular. Because you don't have to deal with it. Because I think part of the reason, and correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, that you can't get very low mass ratios among common envelope binaries is just because either the kick's disrupted or just the mass transfer doesn't work out, right? Or the mass transfer expands the orbit too much. But if you don't have to deal with the mass transfer part of that, COSI, I seem to remember you can get slightly more mass asymmetric systems.
Is that right?
Yeah, but the kicks still play a role.
The kicks play a role, but if we're saying kicks are whatever we want them to be, then...
But how long do you think?
So this is just something I worked at some point and did not show in the paper, unfortunately. It's there's a tail that extends out lower, like down to 0.2, maybe. Lower than you get from the field or from clusters.
But in the COSI, also going back a bit to the mass, right, you ever prefer the bit lower mass, because if the higher masses, you need a bigger, more messy perturbator, which are more rare. I mean, certain companion. So I would guess that you limit the masses.
Why do you need a massive third companion?
The less massive, the less effective.
You just put it further out there. You get the same amount of angular momentum.
Takes longer.
Takes longer, and at some point you start having the precession it'll cut you off. So I'm not sure. I think I don't remember if the paper, your paper and Fabio's, where they actually look on the mass function in that respect. I would guess it would be lower than what you kind of started with itself.
Yeah, so the mass function from like our paper is very, very high in masses because if you take, kick models, the only way you can get no black hole kicks, which is what you need to keep the triple intact.
Yeah, well, this is the direct collapse stuff. But this is due to almost all models.
Sure.
So that's not a different, something different. It's what I said, if you have a cutoff mass for the direct collapse, whatever, then you should see a cutoff or very significant difference at some mass range. Okay. Probably at the lower mass, so I would guess, I don't know, 10, 15 solar mass, you start having something changes in the mass function. For example, if you see something like that, it tells you actually something about it.
Maybe arguably we are. I mean, the power law mass of black holes from LIGO is shallower than saltpeter. It's all mass black holes are just zipping around out there out of their binders.
And that's not with real far, it was some time ago, but they have some crew of a kink around, but I guess we need more space.
Which will be interesting too, because that'll bring the overall rate down, I think, a fair bit, if you exclude all black holes from like 5 to 10 solar masses. Because otherwise the power laws that y'all use to fit things go down to 5 solar masses, right? And that's where most of the stuff is. Anyway.
Okay, so the last bit, let's talk about spins. For a while, these seem to be great ways of distinguishing between channels, but not anymore. It now appears that a lot of channels, and this, of course, depends, as we were hearing in the very beginning of this discussion, on exactly which prescription is used for angular momentum transport in stars, but it seems that there's more of a convergence towards low spins, coincidentally, as the LIGO data are showing preference for low spins.
So, and I'll stop you there, because if you took the old Woolsey Hager models that were tuned not to match the LIGO data, because it was before LIGO came out, but to match the pulsar data, those will fit the LIGO data fine. So,
yes.
So if we had, if those are the models you used, you would be fine. You didn't need LIGO to tell you that. You had pulsar.
You had low angular momentum, the injection issue about how they
start spinning. If high angular momentum was very common in the universe, we would expect all the exotic transits, GRBs, superluminous, everything to be much more common than it is. So to me, it's always smelled like very likely, high spin.
Excellent.
The rarity.
I'm glad you're all bringing this up, because this means that we can make a clear prediction that we're not going to have high spins, right? Because all these clear mechanisms prior to LIGO, all the stuff, it's clear we can say the spins are low.
I'm just saying it depends. Okay. If there's correlations between the things that are making these exotic transients and the channels that make these exotic, these are still rare events. So if there's if you're taking two rare sets, but if you're just randomly drawing black holes from the universe that evolved, independently, then I would expect a low spin.
Right. Remember, of course, the same Woolsey hypernova models that require very rapidly rotating cores to make gamma ray bursts.
But those are rare.
But those are 1 in 1,000 quarks.
Yeah. So I think
these are
1 in 10,000.
That's what I'm saying. It's correlated, but if you're pulling black holes But if they're correlated,
well, but the point is, though, you know, in the chemically, you know, the original chemically homogeneous models, those naturally produce hypernovae, and they naturally produce
at least many hypernovae. We're talking more about dynamical channels where you're. Yeah, I agree. We may have naively expected in these models to have high spin, maybe.
Yeah. So you would argue that in dynamical channels, by that argument, the spin should be low. For the first generation. For the first generation, and but in field, we can't say, because they could be correlated. Is that fair?
Yes, that's what I would say.
Yeah. It's also useful to remember that to the degree that we can trust it in the systematics aren't a problem, a lot of measurements of black hole spin parameters in our galaxy in X-ray binaries are high. With disagreements occasionally between models, a lot of caveats, but this is at least a statement. And I know that there are also arguments about why it is that it could be that the things that ultimately become double black hole mergers are a very different evolutionary channel than the ones that are happily feasting on a companion. Are there predictions that people are willing to make? Or are there willing? Is anyone willing to say that their model cannot get a high spin?
There's been a bunch of studies on primordial black holes, but it's hard to make high-spinning primordial black holes.
Hard, but I'm sure that if we were able to find...
Well, everyone who's... There's a series of, like, six papers all which predict the spins at the percent, you know, A of 0.01.
After the LIGO measurements. So there is the possibility of being informed.
No, these are before the LIGO measurements. These are the Sasaka, the original... PBH stuff was driven by the Macho results, which was prior to LIGO. So there are predictions that primordial black hole spins are low.
Okay.
For what I understand, that claim comes just from the fact that when they form, the overdensity region is supposed not to have anisotropy, I mean, rotation. Or
torques on it.
Torques or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But then if they have multiple mergers, to go to multiple merger, then it's another story. You know, the spin can also grow in
that. One would think, yes.
So, but then you need to do the same separation that we're doing for field binaries, which is, say, we have primordial binaries, which can go through, you know, the binaries that formed in the early universe will have low eccentricity, probably if sufficiently isolated and not gone through multiple mergers, or you have, you know, direct capture and binary-binary interactions of primordial black holes in dense stellar regions.
Yeah.
Dense regions.
So we don't know.
So it sounds like there's also a lack of inclination to say strongly any of these models.
Well, I think that, you know, in the field binary and isolated evolution, we expect that there is a distribution of spins, but that the mean or median of the distribution should not be negative.
Yeah,
people have talked about kicks as a way of getting around that. What do you think?
To make every
you can do it like 1% of the time. Which
they should be biased up. So it's hard to make the chi effective.
In individual cases, yes. But
yeah.
I think that in the distribution of sources, the population, the median or the mean should not be negative.
And that should show up pretty easily. If there's any spin at all anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So for the field binaries, you would basically say that...
That's what we can do, so we can't do negative.
No, it's
we have to run.
I'm sorry. I was temporarily being positive. My mistake.
And some error bar on that?
Because of the LIGO data, there is one event which...
Well, squiggle means
population. This is population.
That's for population.
The average is
on the population.
Yes. So I think
individual
clusters can make a sort of combined logical statement, which is that either the spins are large, and eventually you'll see a peak from first-generation black holes an isotropic distribution, so centered at zero with long tails, or you get a large number of second-generation things in the mass gap. But you can't do both.
You can't make highly clusters, can't make spins at 0.7 unless they're the product of prior mergers. That would be the negative way of saying that. So they'll be in the mass gap.
Yeah. So you can't have, for instance, the entire population can't have, you know, has large spins, or they have low spins and some things will be in the mass gap. So you have a contrapositive to that is, I can do basic logic in my head. No, I can't. It's whatever you said.
did you say? I mean, so is the statement that the first generation mergers are going to have low spin?
You can't make stuff in the mass gap that has low spin.
Oh, no, that's not quite what I said. No, I'm saying you can't fill the mass gap if the first generation has high spins.
Right.
Uh-huh. So 1g greater than 0.7 plus m parentsability supernova in some sense.
Actually, it can be lower than 0.7, I think 0.5, even if you don't really get significant retention.
Okay. Depends on how aligned they are, of course.
Does any interaction model give the mean value of chi effective being different than 0?
That's a good question. I mean, so I guess it's a question of how much you think Kozai Lidov has to play. Because that's something that can preferentially reorient.
Wait, reorient?
How? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you have your black holes with, let's say, they form in a binary aligned, and then they are tilted with respect to each other and then merge.
Oh, right, yeah. There you tend to produce a distribution that's near zero. A little bit above it, but mostly near zero.
So if we took out the Kozai Lidov channel and said for as long as that's not contributing, if that's not a significant contributor, then those models would predict the mean value of chi effective to be zero.
Okay. But that's only for field binaries. Any dynamically formed Kozai will be isotropic.
Okay.
So the isolated.
So mean value of chi effective equals zero is impossible.
Is not equal to zero is impossible.
Yeah, not equal to zero.
Cannot be equal to zero.
So the idea is that there's going to be an isotropy, or at least a symmetry, which is going to give you a chi effective of average of zero. I mean, it has been talked about, of course, that if you have a chi effective which is definitively less than zero, that this is easier to do if you're throwing things at each other in random directions than it is if you are evolving them in place.
Well, the term thing, they should be more or less that these two black holes are independent.
So the same statement would work then, right?
We wrote highly aligned / anti-aligned for star clusters, and then we also have, or for stellar clusters, and we also have this, right? Can you just say, for my naive mind, like, what is the difference between having highly aligned and anti-aligned?
So, like, in a cluster, right, you're throwing things around randomly, so you're randomly sampling like spheres. So you can't get two things that are directly on the pole, either pole. I mean, you can, but it's extremely unlikely. The only way to do that is if they start off already aligned, or in a really weird Kozai case, get totally flipped and merged in that case. But like from clusters, most of the things are just going to be lying in the plane.
Now, can you get chi effective, mean chi effective not equal to zero in the primordial model?
Universe
no.
has a preferred angle.
No.
Unless you.
Well, the pictures where you form the binary, you need a tidal torque on the distribution, and I guess what's not quite clear to me is if you have a tidal torque, that involves that some tidal torque on each one, so there might be a preference for alignment and the collapse of the things that make the two black holes. They're torquing each other, and it's already. Then tightly torque to make the binary anyway.
Yeah.
So how much do we worry about for spins the fact that a lot of the high mass X-ray binaries have high spins? High mass is close to lots, but you know that they do we just not trust their spin measurements?
I think there are really two things to think about. One is that the spin measurements, both of the methods, so continuum fitting and the iron K-alpha, have their own potential systematic errors. When there are cases where you can measure the spin of a black hole with both methods, they agree more often than not, but they also can disagree. So that's something to keep in mind. The other is that it's a different evolutionary channel with different separations and things like that, which means that you shouldn't necessarily, it's not an apples-to-apples comparison. That's the other possibility.
Yeah, and so I understand that, but even with that, we should find out what, you know, I don't think we know what's different about that evolution that's going to make them spin faster, if that's the solution you pick the solution to. And we do this on lots of things, like a lot of the, you know, population census models have troubles making the low mass X-ray binaries as well, with the mass ratios that make lots of neutron star mergers and lots of black hole binary mergers. But we seem to not worry about that particular set of data when we talk about these.
It's good we have a lot of observations to worry about, and we can hope to put it together. It's quite a bit past 11. Any final comments on this?
I don't like the fact that primordial can do anything.
Yes.
I think the problem is we don't actually have a good representative for primordial here to.
Yeah, that may be. But as in the philosophy of this list, it makes it the least powerful model.
Yes.
So that's a positive. So thank you very much for everybody for contributing. I hope you've enjoyed yourselves.
I guess I just say one thing about the location channel is kind of embarrassing.
You're right. Yeah. So this, in fact, was the other Chris Belchinsky thing.
I think if it turned out that they were mostly in either high metallicity, high star formation objects, I think that would be a problem for chemically homogeneous and massive black holes in almost any model if they were mainly in Milky Way type galaxies with high star formation rates and high metallicity objects. But I think the interesting question here is, what are the prospects? I mean, LISA obviously is mainly one point help of locations, but what are the prospects for actually getting the locations for a population? I think, EM might give you a couple of them, but that's not for most of this. You care about a population.
Yeah.
So what do we need to do to actually fill in the location boxes?
But for the EM color? Everybody cannot?
No, I claim triples who can make EM, AGN disks can make EM.
No, I can suggest a unique thing, okay? If you have a precursor supernova, that rules out all of the nine colors.
Yeah, so something...
For this
right. And in the stuff that you generate...
That can happen in isolated. It's a rare case, but...
And the work you've done with Erez, this is... like within a decade prior, and so you have a particular kick that really happens to drive you directly towards the companion.
There, if you actually had LISA, straight on, you need to see it in LISA as it happens.
Anything else? Great, thanks.